The title of our sermon is Trust in Taxing Times. Yeah, you're feeling it, aren't you? Trust in Taxing Times. In the year 2000, which wasn't that long ago, Richard Rodriguez broke the world record for riding a roller coaster. And he did it on the Big Dipper in Blackpool. If you're familiar with Blackpool and the Big Dipper, it's a bit of a bone shaker, and it just goes up and down, and that's about it. But he did it for 2,000 hours, which is more than 3 months, just to put that into perspective. He rode the Big Dipper in Blackpool, year 2000, 2,000 hours, seemed like a good idea at the time. And he did that, he ate on it, he drank on it, he slept on it, and he did all of that through the typical Blackpool waterfront weather. Up and down, up and down, up and down, through thick and thin, and he got to the end of his 2,000 hours. Sometimes the Christian life can be a little bit like that, can't it? We have moments which are great, and then very soon we plummet down, and we have moments that aren't so great. And then we rise again, and we go back down, and we rise again, and we go back down. And sometimes we feel completely out of control of what's going on in our lives. Sometimes it's more like a runaway train. Well, Peter knew all about this. And Matthew records in chapter 16 and 17 something of Peter's kind of roller coaster journey, and there's lots of ups and downs just through chapters 16 and 17. And the part we're considering is a bit that Matthew is the only writer who records, but I think it really fits into the context of following Peter through these chapters. So let me explain to you what's happening in 16 and 17, and we'll do it through Peter's perspective, okay? It was going so well. Jesus asked us who he really was, and before the other disciples could make a fool of themselves, I chipped in. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Well, Jesus seemed quite impressed with my answer. In fact, get this, he said the Father had revealed it to me. That felt pretty good. And he didn't stop there. He went on to say that I was a rock and he's going to build his kingdom on me. He was going to give me the keys to the kingdom. Pretty awesome. Then it all seemed to go horribly wrong. Jesus dropped a bombshell. He wanted us to know that he was going to go to Jerusalem and our religious leaders were going to kill him. I wasn't having any of this. So I took Jesus outside and I gave him a piece of my mind. But the response that Jesus gave was not what I was expecting. Get behind me, Satan. You're a hindrance to me. You're not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. I mean, a few minutes ago, he said that the Father had revealed something to me. And now he's saying, I'm not setting my mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. And Jesus then went on to teach us that if we're going to follow him, we've got to lose our own lives. In fact, he said, we'd have to take up a cross and follow him. When Jesus first called me to follow him, that was not what I signed up for at all. 6 days later, things were looking up again. Jesus picked me as one of his favourite three to go on a field trip up a mountain. When we reached the top, the most amazing thing happened. Jesus changed. His face began to shine like the sun. We couldn't even look at him. And we noticed that there were two men with him. But not just any two men. Get this, Moses and Elijah. They're kind of the two biggest legends of our nation. And there they were on the mountain with Jesus. I saw them talking with him. Incredible. And I had a brilliant idea. Let's make three tents. One for Jesus, one for Moses, one for Elijah. And I hadn't even finished talking my amazing suggestion when God interrupted me. And God spoke from heaven, "This is my beloved Son." And we should listen to him. Well, as we were coming down the mountain, Jesus started talking about suffering again. He was talking about dying and being killed. And he mentioned rising from the dead. Oh, this did not make any sense at all. And Jesus took us to Galilee, and he insisted on telling us again that he was going to be killed and be raised. And this was really beginning to get to us by this point. You see, Jesus, he keeps calling himself the Son of Man. And for us, the Son of Man means someone who's going to come and establish God's kingdom on earth. It means someone who's going to get rid of our corrupt rulers, overthrow the Romans and establish God's rule on earth. Bring back Israel. Jesus being killed would be a disaster. And we'd look like idiots for following him. When we got to Capernaum, Jesus was in the house and I'd gone into the town. And the temple tax collectors came to me wanting to know if Jesus paid the temple tax. I just told them he did. But I didn't really know what to say. And I didn't know what to say to Jesus when I got back to the house. But when I got back, I didn't have to say anything. Jesus knew about it already. He spoke to me first. And I'm so glad he did. Because it reminded me of why I need to trust him completely. When we get to the end of chapter 17, Peter's been on this roller coaster. And it's almost like Jesus takes Peter off the roller coaster and gives him a breather. We're going to have some one-on-one time now, Peter. You've had it with the three disciples up the mountain, but you need some one-on-one. And we see this interaction that only Matthew records that kind of reflects, I think, something of the journey Peter's on, but also prepares him for the journey that Peter's going on, because this roller coaster isn't going to stop for Peter. We're going to see four things. Firstly, we can trust Jesus 100% because he knows. So when Peter walks into the house, Jesus initiates the conversation. Matthew's specific. He says Jesus spoke to him first, and he brings up the issue of tax. Jesus knows everything that's happened in the marketplace. He knows every conversation that's taken place. Peter's gone away from Jesus, out into the town. A conversation's happened. Peter returns, and Jesus knows about it already. What's this telling Peter? Peter, if Jesus is killed, if Jesus isn't with you anymore, standing by your side, guess what? He still knows what you're going through. He still knows of every experience you have. I don't need to be stood next to you, Peter. I know. And if I die and rise again, I'm still with you. I still know all things. And when Jesus is talking about his impending death, we see there at the end of verse 23, they're greatly distressed. The disciples are troubled by this. It's a big news. But if Jesus is talking about his impending death, and Jesus knows all things, it's not a mistake. Peter, you can trust me. I know what I'm doing. I know all things. I wonder how much you trust Karen Jacobson. Karen Jacobson? Who's that? I hear you ask. Well, she's the lady on Google who tells you to take the second exit of the roundabout, or to turn left at the crossroads, or to come off the next junction on the motorway. Karen Jacobson tells millions of people around the world what to do every day. And people listen to her and do what she says. It's incredible. We didn't even know her name. But we're willing to trust her. But there's so many flaws to it. She doesn't know necessarily, she does sometimes, if there's a road closure. She doesn't know necessarily, she does sometimes, if someone's had a car crash. And also, if your phone runs out of battery and you use your phone for Google Maps, then you're in trouble. Or if you run out of signal, you might not be able to get her instructions. So there's limitations. But you know, with Jesus, there is no limitations. In Jesus, we have one who's always present, even if he's not sat in the car next to us. He was with Peter in the marketplace. He's with us. He, even when our batteries are down to 1%, he's still going 100%. We have to trust him. When we don't know what we need, when we don't even know where we need to go or what we need to type in, Jesus knows. He knows it all. In the times of distress, when we're rattling around on the roller coaster of life, being battered by the Blackpool weather, maybe that's what it feels like. He knows. He knows what we're going through. He knows why we're going through it. He knows the person who's working in the office who gets marginalised and belittled every day because they're a Christian and everyone knows it. He knows that. He knows the young Christian mother who receives that awful diagnosis that no one can comprehend why this has happened. Jesus knows. He knows the family man who's notified of his redundancy and his house is going to be repossessed and his family is going to be out on the street. Why, Jesus? He knows why. He knows the pain. He knows the situation. He knows even the small child who's bullied at school because they say they love Jesus. He knows that. And Peter is really struggling with the idea of Jesus talking about dying. But if Jesus knew what he was doing, talking about dying and rising again, if God knew what he was doing, allowing Jesus to suffer and die, guess what? He knows what he's doing in our situations and in our lives. Every step of the way, he knows. And we can trust him. Will you trust him? Keep looking to him. He knows. So Peter, you can trust Jesus 100%. Why? Because he knows. Secondly, Peter, you can trust Jesus 100% because he reigns. Now Jesus starts to address this issue about whether or not he should pay the temple tax. But he wants Peter to do the thinking. How typical of Jesus, asking the questions. And he asks Peter this question: what do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take toll or tax? From their sons or from others? Who are the kings going to tax? Are they going to tax the royal family? Or are they going to tax the people? That's a no-brainer for Peter. Obviously, they're going to tax the people. They're not going to tax their own family. And more often than not, in those days, you'd tax the nation that you'd conquered. They'd be the people you tax. And Jesus brings about a logical conclusion. Well, if they tax the people, then the sons are free from paying tax. What can we conclude from this? Well, this tax that we're talking about here was instituted in Exodus 30. You can read that for your homework. Exodus 30, the tax was instituted, and every male age 20 plus had to give half a shekel at the census. And the tax was badged as an offering to the Lord. That's what it was for. It was an offering to the Lord. We'll think about it later on. But who is Jesus? Well, he's the Son of God. Who is Jesus? Well, he's the Lord. So does Jesus have to pay tax? Or is he free? Well, he's free, isn't he? He's the Lord. In fact, they're the one, he should be the one receiving all the tax if it's an offering to the Lord. He is the Son of the living God. Peter's already pointed that out, not much before. And by paying the tax, the people think they're making an offering to the Lord. But the reality of what's going on in this situation is completely different. In the context of this passage, Jesus is the one making an offering. Jesus is the one saying, I'm going to suffer. I'm going to be killed. I'm making an offering for the people. Now, we're looking at this retrospectively. I think this would have gone completely over Peter's head. But Jesus is the one who makes the offering. But actually, he's the Lord who should be receiving the offering. But notice that Jesus doesn't just say, the Son is free. He says, the sons are free. And as we read through our New Testament, we find out that it's not just Jesus who reigns as the Son of God. We find out that God has adopted into his royal family millions who become sons of God. You're a son of God. And I say sons because that's what the Bible says. Whether you're male or female, we're all sons of God. Sons of the living God. Just like Peter said of Jesus, you're the Son of the living God. We are sons of the living God. And the New Testament's clear that we will reign with him over the new earth. We're free from paying the tax, if you like. We've got the freedom of Jesus. We are royalty in God's family. Imagine the royal family and all the privileges they have of being a prince in the royal family. Now just imagine, it might be hard to imagine this, but just imagine the royal family adopted someone from the streets of Southport. Yeah? Someone no one had even heard of, but they adopted him, and he became a prince in the royal family. And he walks up to the gates of the palace, and the gates open. He doesn't walk. He's being driven in a Range Rover, and the gates open, and in he goes. And he has every privilege of being a royal. You see, that's remarkable. That's the situation you are in if you're a follower of Jesus Christ this morning. You are in his royal family. You have all the rights and privileges of a son of God, and you will walk into his kingdom and reign with him. So as you ride this spiritual roller coaster in life, through the ups and through the downs, let's be always mindful of the fact, two things. Firstly, Jesus is reigning as God's Son. He's above all earthly authority. We can trust him. He's reigning. And secondly, we are in his family too, and we will reign with him as adopted sons of God. When we're in the real lows, remember, God didn't leave Jesus, his son, in the grave. He rose him up again. And we're God's sons, and he won't leave us in the grave. He'll rise up us up again. We can have comfort in that. And rather than being taxed, we will have all creation to enjoy for ourselves. Think back to Eden. It will be ours to enjoy. No tax. What a place that will be. We can trust Jesus 100% because he reigns. Thirdly, Peter, you can trust Jesus 100% because he submits. Now, one of the reasons Peter was in so much distress was this idea of his leader submitting to the religious authorities. It just seemed like defeat, especially if it led to death. And notice that Jesus is already in chapter 16, verse 21. He's already told the disciples who is going to kill him. He says that he's going to suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and he's going to be killed. So he's identified who's going to kill him. It's the religious leaders. It's the people who run the temple. And now Jesus is being asked to pay a tax to the temple that he doesn't have to pay, because he's the Son of the living God and he's free. And he is the Lord who shall be receiving all the tax. So what's Jesus going to do? Well, I think these words are incredible. Because Jesus says this: the sons are free, however, not to give offence to them. Not to give offence to them. Jesus, you've just said they're going to kill you, and you're bothered about offending them. I just find that remarkable. That the Lord of heaven, the Son of the living God, walking on planet Earth under a corrupt leadership who are going to kill him, says, I'm not going to offend them. I'm going to pay the tax. I just think that's incredible. And this simple act of paying the tax, well, it speaks volumes about the pattern of Jesus' kingdom. You see, Jesus' kingdom is not about gaining the upper hand. It's not about status. It's not about wealth. It's not about appearance. It's not about education and qualifications. It's not about winning arguments. It's not about scoring points against our enemies. That's not what God's kingdom is about. God's kingdom is about humility. It's about submission. And it's often about suffering. That's the pattern that Jesus sets for his kingdom. And Peter, he's going to ultimately come to see that Jesus' suffering at the cross is the pattern for his kingdom. Just as Jesus said that the disciples would have to take up their cross and follow him, it's the pattern that we have to follow. Listen to these words that Peter wrote in his epistle. So Peter's kind of had a few years' experience now, and this is what he writes, although not that long, but this is what he writes. For what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you've been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. There's the example, says Peter. I've learned the lesson. Jesus has set us an example that in his kingdom we suffer, we submit to our authorities, because God is the one who judges justly. And Jesus has set us this example at the cross. Peter, interestingly, in his epistle, the same chapter, he says that we are to live as people who are free. Does that ring any bells? We've been granted freedom as sons of God, but we are still to willingly submit to those in authority over us. We may not have voted for them, but we're still to humbly submit to them. And in doing so, we follow Jesus' example. In doing so, we're submitting to Jesus, because all authorities will one day bow before him. And even when our submission results in suffering, we can trust in Jesus, 100%. We're following his example. We're taking up our crosses and following him. And just as we follow him in his suffering, we follow him in his resurrection. We follow him in his glory. We will receive glory just as he received glory. That's what following his example leads to. So Peter, you can trust Jesus 100% because he knows. You can trust Jesus 100% because he reigns. You can trust Jesus 100% because he submits. And lastly, Peter, you can trust Jesus 100% because he provides. How is Jesus going to pay this tax? Well, he could go to Judas, who holds the kitty, providing he hasn't nicked it all. And he could say, come on, Judas, I need half a shekel, need to go and pay my temple tax. But that's not what's going to happen. Jesus is going to provide for himself. He instructs Peter to go to the Sea of Galilee, to take a fishing rod with a hook, and to go and catch a fish. Just one fish. The first fish you catch. And what's happening here is the one who spoke and made the Sea of Galilee is now speaking. The one who spoke and made the fish in the sea is now speaking. The one who made the metal ore in the ground that would one day be made into a coin, he's now speaking. The one who sets the oxygen levels in the water of the Sea of Galilee to make sure the fish can live, he's speaking. And these things all come together as Peter casts his hook, and out comes a fish with one coin in its mouth, just enough for Peter and Jesus to pay the temple tax. Now, what could have happened here is that Jesus told Peter to get in his boat, cast the net over the other side, full of fish, all of them with their mouths stuffed with money. That could have happened, couldn't it? Peter, you'll never need to worry about the temple tax again. It's all in the boat. Yeah? Could have happened. But that's not how Jesus works. You see, he gives Peter exactly what he needs for there and then. And guess what? Peter's going to have to carry on trusting Jesus every day. And every time the tax comes up, he's got to keep looking to Jesus for provision. It's no coincidence that Jesus will continue to provide what Peter needs when he needs it. But the question is this. They only asked for Jesus to pay the tax. That was what the religious leaders asked for. So why does Jesus pay for Peter as well? Could have just paid for himself. Well, if you read Exodus 30, again, part of your homework, there's two phrases that come up as you read through when this tax is instituted. And the first one is this. This tax is a ransom for life. That's the first one. So the context of the tax was it was given at the census. So when you put your name down on the census to say I exist in the nation of Israel, you would pay a tax to say this is a ransom for my life. And the second phrase is this, that the tax is to make atonement for your life. Again, you can look it up in Exodus 30. They're the two phrases that describe what this tax is for. Now clearly, half a shekel isn't the price of a life, is it? But it's a small kind of symbolism. Just like sacrificing a sheep and a goat isn't the price of a life either. And you see, Jesus, he's been talking all along about his death and his resurrection. And Peter's completely confused by the whole thing. Jesus doesn't have to pay the tax. He's free. Jesus doesn't have to pay a ransom for his life. Does he? Jesus doesn't have to make atonement for his life. He has no sin. Jesus doesn't have to submit. Jesus doesn't have to suffer. But he does it all for Peter. And in doing so, he's going to pay Peter's tax and pay a ransom for Peter's life and make atonement for Peter's life. But in a much bigger way, I mean, it's a tiny symbol. In a much bigger way, the context of this is Jesus is constantly saying, I'm going to die, Peter. I'm going to rise again. And Peter's saying, I don't get it. And Jesus says, I'll pay for you. I'm going to pay the ransom for your life. I'm going to make atonement for your life. I don't have to pay it. I'm a son of God and I'm free. But I am going to pay it. I'm going to suffer. I'm going to die. I don't have any sins to pay for, and I don't have to suffer, and I don't have to die, but I'm going to take all of your suffering, I'm going to take all of your hell, I'm going to take all of your sins, and I'm going to suffer and pay the price in full. There'll be nothing left for you to pay. Imagine you go to a wedding, one of these posh weddings where you feel a bit out of place, well I do anyway, and it's about a 5-course meal. And, you know, they bring out the cheese at the end. It's like, who eats cheese after a meal? And then they bring out mints and hot drinks and all this. And you're stuffed. And you think, that was a fantastic meal. Not sure what half the things are I've just eaten, but it was great. And you call the waiter over and you say, listen, that was brilliant. Can I have the bill? Can I have the bill now? Dread to think what it is, but can I have the bill? And the waiter looks at you like you've got two heads. Says, I don't think you've been to one of these before. This is a wedding. And what's happened is, it's all been paid for in advance. You just have to eat it and enjoy it. Nothing to pay. Do you know, when we come to God, and we think that we can pay something to contribute, Peter certainly had it in his head that he was something special. We think we can bring something to God, and God turns around and says, it's all paid for. Put your hands back in your pockets. There's nothing in there enough anyway to pay for what you need. Jesus has paid it all on the cross. God's kingdom is like a wedding that we will go to one day. And there's nothing to pay. In fact, the Bible says even our clothes are provided for us. Sorry if you like shopping, and weddings are a good excuse for that. But in the God's kingdom, it's all provided because Jesus has paid it all to the very last penny, and we have nothing left to pay. We just have to trust in Him 100% for His provision and turn up. I wonder what you're trusting in to provide for you in this life and in the next. I guess if I was to do it, I look around my office where I work, or the people in my street, they'd be trusting in their pensions. Oh, it's the most important thing. Get your pension sorted, retire early, happy days, life fulfilled. Maybe it's your career. Maybe it's getting a really good CV because you just feel like you've achieved something. Maybe it's the state. Maybe that's what you're going to rely on. But whatever it is, it's not going to do anything for you when you get to the grave, is it? What are you trusting in for eternity? There's only really one place you can go, isn't there? You can only trust Jesus. He's the only one who's gone in the grave and come out the grave. And if you've got any hope of coming out the grave, He's the only one you can trust in. He is the one who's died on the cross for sins. He is the one who's paid the penalty. He is the one who's paid the tax. And you're free. And He's paid for your life. Come to Him. Trust Him 100%. Because He will provide. To conclude, remember that rickety roller coaster Peter's on? Well, Peter, there's lots you don't know. But trust Jesus 100%, because He knows. Peter, you feel like you've got no control over life situations, and you haven't. But trust Jesus 100%, because He reigns. Peter, it might seem like the complete opposite thing to what comes naturally to you. But submit and trust Jesus 100%, because He submitted. Peter, you may not know how you'll survive if Jesus dies, but trust Jesus 100%, because He will provide. Believer, are you trusting Jesus 100%, not 90%, 100%. Stop trusting yourselves. Trust in Him. He knows, He reigns, He submits, and He will provide.